He's ready. His name is Mike Thomas. My name is Matt Waters. That must mean it's time for Mike and Matt's Excellent Adventures. Who would have thought the podcast that started it all, like, 2 years ago, would get to 16 episodes? Before we get into Legion Season 2, Mike, how are you surviving the unescapable hellscape, post-apocalyptic weather that we are all enjoying at the moment?
I am sitting directly in front of a fan, and I do not plan on moving pretty much ever again.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, for those who know, I think we talked about it briefly in the podcast last time that I moved to a new apartment in New York, and me being a lazy weirdo, I've not bought an air conditioner yet, because I find the social situation required me to contact my landlord so that he'll come and install it. So
just anxiety,
anxiety inducing. That I'm just like, you know what? I'll just die instead.
Exactly. And it's the polite white thing to do. It's just die from embarrassment.
Yeah. And I'm just going to die from heat instead.
I
did buy a fan, though, and it's beautiful. Nice. It's a tower fan. Okay. It's just blowing right at me right now. So,
welcome to Mike and Matt's Air Conditioning Solution Review Podcast. There's, like, no aircon anywhere in the UK. There's aircon in, like, office buildings. Everywhere else, it's the worst. And it's, like, it's like 90 degrees American here. So it's just the worst. Carpet everywhere. All the houses designed to keep heat in because it's normally cold as fuck. It's horrible.
When I was in England briefly for like 30 hours last year, it was right around this time. Yeah. And I just missed your awful heat wave.
Yeah. And, 30 hours. Didn't spend one of them with Matt Ward.
You know what? You're like a 45-minute train ride away. It's a far away from London.
It's true. It's true.
I realized, like, I was standing with, like, family friends, and I was like, oh, this is how rich they are. They have air conditioner.
That's how you know.
Not only do they have, like, a 5-floor apartment in Kensington, but they have air conditioning.
Nice. I mean, I have a 3-floor house, but it's really narrow, so it's not as fancy as it sounds.
Plus, you're in Manchester, not Kensington.
I am not in Manchester.
You're in somewhere else.
Cambridge.
But you're not in Kensington. Just listen to the way Kensington rolls off your tongue.
Yeah, it just
sounds rich.
Oh, it is. So is Cambridge, in theory. But
Cambridge, there we go. Yeah. See, that's the same thing as Manchester.
Oh, the, like, 3 people from Britain that listen to this are just angry at you. So they've joined the rest of the internet. So, yeah, this is Excellent Adventures, episode 16. Legion completed its second season. We both finally watched it. Before we go any further, I'm going to plug some shit. From Broadcast Depth is our podcast dedicated to Lost that is hosted by Kevin Ford and Ben Lundy. They are into season 3 of Lost now. If you like that Damon Lindelof show, you might like Countdown to Destruction, which is me and Ben Phillips' podcast about The Leftovers, which I'm hoping to put this episode up really soon, so it will be, like, coming soon when you hear this Legion episode. But enough of that. Let's talk about Legion.
So that entire conversation about air conditioning in England was actually just a meta exercise in meaningless things happening online that you just get to experience. You just react to them as opposed to them actually having any substantive value of storytelling and significance. Speaking of...
Yeah, okay, sure, we'll go with that as well. So yeah, we reviewed season 1. I don't really remember how you felt about it.
Honestly, I was like, about in the last week, I was like, you know, I should really listen back to that. I don't remember anything about the season, let alone how I feel about it. But I do, like, I know the feeling it left me with, which is, I enjoyed it, I don't remember any of it, and I'll never rewatch it. But what I will say is, I bring that up just because this season ended with being like, wow, I should go back and rewatch everything to see if this has any more meaning. I'd say that, like, kind of tracks my difference between 1 and 2.
Okay. I think when we recorded our episode on season 1, I think I'd seen every episode once, and I watched them 1 week apart, you know, TV-style schedule. And I was like, I like parts of it, I don't like other parts. And then several months later, I sort of binged through it again. And I enjoyed it a lot more on a second watch. And I had an almost identical experience this time where I was watching them every week, 1 week apart. I would find myself quite frustrated when things weren't moving as quickly as I liked, or we were bogged down in an area of the plot that didn't interest me or something like that. And I would find myself week after week getting more and more sort of like annoyed at the show almost. And then to prepare for this episode, because I'm a responsible adult, I basically watched it all again in the space of about 3 days. And I now like it a lot more. And I don't know if I like it more because of a second viewing or because I watched it closer together. And I'll never know because you can only experience it for the first time once. But I think just generally I can't handle TV that requires you to keep a lot of stuff in your head, and also there's like a 1 week gap between episodes, you know? Like, maybe I'm just too dumb and can't keep enough stuff in my head, but I enjoy stuff like this a lot more when I binge it, so...
It was interesting. It was, you know, there was actually like four shows on FX I was watching at the same time. I don't know what Legion airs on yours, but it Atlanta, the Americans, and the awful show that I will never watch season two of, the Danny Boyle show, or the fuck that show was. Those were all airing at the same time. So I was kind of putting off Legion, figuring, because you told me that Legion in the UK was going to be like, was like 2 weeks behind.
Yeah, 2 weeks
behind. I use that as an excuse, but I was really like getting far behind and getting intimidated by the idea of watching so much of it.
Yeah.
But I, what I found was, it was a similar experience. Like, I would have to watch like four or five in a row, and I was enjoying it a lot more. Yeah. And I couldn't decide, was the show actually more streamlined, or was just my experience more streamlined, and thus I was enjoying it more. Mm. And well, then, but then what would happen was, I would like, not keep up week to week, so then I would have to watch another chunk of four in a row. And then I enjoyed those within the bubble, but things that were like connecting back to the first four episodes of the season, like, they had no meaning for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a weird experience. I would say what perfectly captures Legion to me, I think it was episode three or four, the episode where like the one where he repeats the same scene over and over again, right?
Well, the one with Sid. Like, yeah. In her memory, or, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. So yeah. That happens, I would say, in the show for, like, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Like, where she just does the same scene over and over again?
Yes.
My FX app, like, the channel app on the Roku, had a glitch.
Mm-hmm.
And this scene repeated for 45 minutes, and I did not think I was watching... I didn't think anything was wrong. Like, I literally just thought...
So you just sat and watched that for 45 minutes?
And I thought it perfectly captured, but I was like... What's so funny, though, it's so embarrassing. I was just like, you know what? This is really deep and meaningful. Like, they're just, like, taking this trope, and they're, like, they're not doing anything new with it. Oh, we're just having the same scene over and over again. It's a great parody of this trope in, like, TV shows. But I also thought, at the same time, it's nothing captures Legion better than the fact that it would seem perfectly believable they would do an entire episode just repeating the same scene with no changes every single time.
It does.
And then, like, I was convincing myself there are all these minuscule changes, like, every five minutes, and and really, I mean, that's Legion in a nutshell, right?
This is my favorite Mike Thomas story.
And, like, I'm just sitting here being like, man, this is so deep. This is just so deep. What a great commentary.
I'm going to go live journal about this.
Modern storytelling. My FX app just, like, glitched out, and I wasn't paying attention enough to notice.
Mm.
But, yeah, Legion. I feel like that really sums up our reaction to Legion right there, that anecdote, and we could just call it a day.
Probably,
like,
to be honest.
A 10-minute episode of review.
It's simultaneously excellent, wanky, and bad.
And I'm completely misunderstanding all of it.
Exactly. Early on, like, my review in progress was like, it's intentionally a lot more confusing. Like, a lot of shit was happening. Like, they established a lot of plot lines and stuff that dangled. And then as it went on, it just seemed really dragged out. Like, it's like they wrote a beginning and an end, and they were just stalling for time on how to get there, because I got really sick of seeing David and Farouk just sit opposite each other and threaten each other. And I found the middle portion incredibly frustrating. And by the end of it, and, like, from viewing it all again, I do think it is all really good. It's just, yeah, I think I'm just done with week-to-week TV.
Yeah, I mean, it's always an exception when I'm watching something week-to-week, and I find it very hard to keep up. Like, I think The Americans, for me, is, like, the last of the old guard of a show that I'm willing to, like, watch an hour every week of.
Sure.
And that I feel, like, actually especially compelled to do that for. Yeah, I do think this show is best, like, probably watching, like, 2 5-hour chunks.
Or one episode for 45 minutes, and then
or
the rest of the episode.
5 minutes of a single episode over and over again, you'll get the exact same experience.
Yeah.
And then ideally, if you're going to do a podcast about it, as soon as you're done watching it, you record the podcast immediately.
Yeah, not wait like 2 weeks and forget everything that happened.
Yeah. So like, I do agree, there are definitely some pacing issues. Like, there should be... It probably could be 8 episodes. I think, what was it? This season was 11 episodes, right?
Yeah, it was 10, and they added one in the middle. And I'm pretty sure I know which one it is, because my other complaint is...
Was it the one that repeated the entire episode?
Yes, it's that one. Because my other complaint is like how they handled characters like Melanie and Kerry, and to an extent, Lenny, who just kind of got benched for the big cast. Lenny appeared more as it went on, but early on I was like, wow, there is not much Lenny here. And then they do that whole episode that's just about those characters, and it's like, I think they sat and they were watching the edit, and maybe they saw some of the reviews, and they were like, oh shit, and they just gave them a whole episode. Because they repeat some of the scenes from that episode in the one after, like her showing up in the car that's on fire, and then getting the gun out. It's like, I feel that was all just added in just to be like, oh, sorry, Jean Smart, wasted actress.
Yeah, I mean, I with Lenny, like, I really thought, like, the way season one was structured, it made, from a strictly character sense, it made sense for her to disappear at the end of that first season.
Sure.
I'm not saying this is right or not, because I don't know, and I haven't researched or found enough interviews about it to find a good answer, but it felt like Aubrey Plaza was such a breakout hit in the show, and that they were like, okay, how can we keep her in the show as opposed to this is what her character would organically do next. I think they struck a balance where it's like, okay, she wasn't planning to be in the show. We're not going to like horseshoe her into things that wouldn't make sense, but she's just not going to be as involved this season.
I think I heard that Aubrey Plaza and Jermaine Clement are like a lot more expensive than the other actors, so they're in it less than they maybe would like them to be, which is a shame, because I mean, ending season one with those two driving off together, I was so hyped to see these two sort of palling around together, and you get a little bit of it, and it's fun when it happens, like them walking down the hallways of Division 3 and just murdering people and singing together, and like the dance off and that kind of stuff, all really good stuff. But then it's like, actually, you're just going to be off to the side because we have a new face for the Shadow King.
Yeah, and even, like, that is, like, I completely forgot about that. It was such an afterthought. Like, it was, you would think that that would kind of be, like, the main crux of the season, and so they kind of get away from it very quickly.
That's why when they announced they'd cast someone as the Shadow King, I was, like, worried that we were just not going to see Aubrey Plaza in season two. And I guess that's just my expectation, because I think those two have great chemistry, and are just sort of, they're a great sort of contrast kind of thing, because he's a little bit more serious, and she's very jittery, and just seeing them pal around, I think, is fun. But all that being said, I do think Naveed Negaban as Farouk is amazing. Like, him flipping between accents and sort of the look and the way he carries himself, I think he was great. It's one of those things where it's like, I wish I had this, but then also this is good, and I don't know which one I would prefer.
Yeah, it was, you know, I've been doing, as you know, and I probably talked about, I try not to read too much about things that I know I'm going to watch in between, like, in between seasons or between sequels or whatever the fuck. And if you had told me that there was this new actor coming in to play the Shadow King, etc., if you'd like written this all on paper in advance, I would have been not terribly enthused for the idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, similar to you, I guess. But, I mean, like, I would have had the same reaction to you that you had. But, he did fine. He did well. Like, he made it his own thing.
Yeah.
I think it put Aubrey Plaza in a far more interesting role, especially since I don't think this show is, you know, terribly long for this earth.
No, I think three seasons is probably it.
And I think that three feels appropriate too, especially where they landed at the end of this season. So absolutely. I thought this was kind of, it was a change of pace that I wasn't ready for, but I think worked out pretty well. Yeah. All things considered.
It reframes her completely, because you get this idea that her and Oliver are prisoners within his mind, or within Oliver's mind, really. But, you know, the Shadow King has absorbed these psyches, and he just takes them out and plays with them. She even phrases it as, he rapes me. And I don't know if she meant, like, he has thoughts of violating her that he makes her experience, or if he just means, you know, he makes me do things against my will kind of thing. But yeah, it certainly reframed her whole situation where, you know, throughout season one, she is the face of the Shadow King. And then you get this reveal that, you know, no, this is just like this is what she used to get through to David, and like, she is a prisoner in this mind. And then putting her back in a physical body in a very disturbing, harrowing, beautifully shot and edited scene, you know, Jermaine Clement looking just sinister as fuck, walking in with his hands like a surgeon or whatever, and you know, taking David's sister's body or whatever.
Like, even the whole structure of that episode was really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reveal was not maybe entirely expected.
No.
You know, I think it made Lenny very, like, you know, sympathetic. But also it kind of was like, you know, she is damaged by this experience. And this idea of being in a different body is also, you know, traumatic for her.
Yeah, and she's haunted by Amy and stuff.
Yeah, and I think all that you know, on a lesser show, like you would, you know, I think you probably are conditioned by so much bad or mediocre TV and movies over the years. Like you see something like that, you think, oh, they wrote out the sister character because they had nothing to do with it. I was like, no, the sister character is now haunting her. Like that's,
yeah.
I don't know. That was a far more interesting direction than I was, you know, expecting.
Yeah. So. And like to see David and Lenny run off together at the end and stuff. It's like, oh,
that was awesome.
This is going places. Like he just shows up. Her as like the bored sniper who's kind of a bit distracted. Also kind of fun. Like the range that Aubrey Plaza gets to show off in both seasons of the show is pretty insane. Like I'm shocked she isn't even an even bigger star than she is. Cause yeah, to go from, you know, someone you could easily do an impression of from in Parks and Rec as like this specific type of low energy girl to look at everything I can do. It's crazy.
Yeah, it feels like she's one movie away. Like it's like it's, she needs like her Juno or something that like.
I keep meaning to watch Ingrid Goes West. I don't know if that's any good or not, but I've
heard good things.
Yeah,
it's on my list.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on. I mean, the simplest version of the plot is just. The Shadow King's trying to get his body back. David is briefly helping him because he has a conversation with Sid in the future, who's like, you have to stop the Shadow King from dying. You have to help him or the world will end. And then he does that to Amy, so David's like, nah, fuck you. And they race for this body. And in the end, he defeats the Shadow King, but instead they sort of... all his friends turn on him and basically say, hey, you're mentally ill. And you are using your powers in a very bad way, and we would like you to take treatment, or we will be forced to potentially kill you. And then he just busts out of there with Lenny. And I'm very glad they did this, because as it's presented in like season one, like Melanie flat out states, oh, you're not mentally ill, you just have powers, and you don't understand them. And if we help you understand them, you won't be mentally ill anymore. And on some level, and also, you know, the idea that the Shadow King is a parasite in his head, a voice in his head that is influencing his actions. It was all very sort of get out of jail free kind of thing. Like this easy relation one to one between his powers and the Shadow King and his mental illness. And just saying, now Farouk's out of his head, he's absolutely fine. And that was actually kind of problematic. So to put it back in a place where it's both. It's worsened by your powers and stuff, but you are mentally ill. Like, you suffered these effects. And I think that was a very smart way to go. And it kind of seems like they're now setting him up to be the villain of the show that is named after him in season three.
Yeah, and I think, you know, more importantly for me than that is we see a lot of, you know, as we know, most superhero products, movies, TV shows are usually male. And yes. I think usually at one point or another... the star, the lead, the superhero, is do they have too much power or something like that? Is a question that either is danced around or asked or sometimes very explicitly directed.
You're too dangerous to exist. We have to kill you for no reason.
Yeah, it's like, is, you know, Batman too much of a fascist?
Yes.
Like,
is Superman too powerful to be in this on this planet? Yeah.
Is Tony Stark doing just being too extra?
well, yes. Like,
yes. And all these questions are asked, and sometimes they even really get truly confronted. But in the end, the movie or the show or whatever always kind of sides on the idea, well, you know, still.
I feel they ask the question to be dramatic and with no actual intention of following through on it. And I think they handle it really well here. And like you kind of see him confronted with his, I don't want to say his white male privilege, but kind of. Because he conducts himself in a manner that, you know, you only need to see these scenes from another angle, and it's like, well, some of your behavior here isn't great. Like, making changes to their brain chemistry without asking them, like, Potonomy's like, wait, you did a thing in my mind? And it's like, it's all just waved off as a funny scene. And, like, Sid doesn't like to be touched. And we actually learn in her, like, focus episode, it's not because of the power. She never liked to be touched. And arguably, she developed the power because of her distaste for being touched. Like, even as a baby before she had power, she didn't like to be touched. And David comes up with a way where they can sort of mentally touch each other. And it's kind of like, on the one hand, that's great, but is that actually what she wants? And it just kind of seems like he's trying to fix everything. And like, especially in that last episode, like, before she even explicitly says it, like, that you drugged me and had sex with me. Because she, like, he makes her forget what had happened for the last few hours. And like, he phrases it as, oh, she just needed to remember how much we love each other. But before they do any of that, like, the way he comes to her as a mental projection and, like, starts kissing her, it's very, like, because, you know, like, sex and consent are a very nuanced thing, and, like, the whole notion of just because you're with someone doesn't mean you consent 100% of the time. And just the way that scene is played, like with her eyes open, and he's very forceful with it. And just to see him called on all of these things and them to not be afraid to go there with their protagonist who we've been behind for two seasons, I thought it was all really well done. And, you know, that's not to even talk about all the, like, scenes where he's torturing someone and he enjoys it and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And how much he'll be the villain all next season, I don't know.
But I mean, they name drop him as, like, Melanie calls him Legion, and at the beginning of that episode, they get as close to the comic book look as they can without looking ridiculous with his hair up and sitting there on a chair and all that stuff. So
it feels like they're taking it head on, which is the important part.
Yes, absolutely. And, like, to call him on some of his behavior where he uses his powers in a way that he doesn't have a right to, like, when he's short, the episode after Amy's, like, changed or taken, I don't know how to phrase it, when they take her body from her, he is confronted by Farouk, who's like, well, didn't you curse Amy and, like, you know, for putting you in Clockworks? And then he's confronted with, like, a mental image of her, and it's, she laughs at him a lot, and he's like, stop it. And just that very controlling, like, hey, do what I say because of my powers kind of thing. It's all very, he's always played it with this sort of dark edge, has Dan Stevens. Because, you know, sometimes he's vulnerable and broken and all this, but as he's gotten more confident, there's also been this edge to his performance. And I'm glad they went this route.
And I think they really make the audience, you know, subtly, force them to confront their own biases, because we're so conditioned to accept a lot of his behavior from superhero characters that this was a rather unexpected ending, and it shouldn't have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're just kind of just okay with it as a society. Like, we're okay that this is, like, who we put up as superheroes. I remember I was watching, I don't know, did you see The Incredibles 2?
Not yet. It's not actually out in the UK yet.
Oh, wow. It's been a month.
I know. That's Incredibles wild. And Ant-Man are both on a one-month delay.
That's funny. I'm seeing Ant-Man tomorrow morning. All right. So
you can go for it. I want to watch it, but, I mean, I'm not precious about spoilers in The Incredibles.
Well, no, it's not about that, but it was more, I was watching The Incredibles, and I was just like, you know what? So much of superheroes movies, especially like The Incredibles, which are kind of a throwback in terms of, like, the criminals there. You know, we have this, like, conception of crime that's, like, it's all about robberies and things like that, and it's always, like, fairly evil-looking, sounding, doing dudes. But really, that's not, like, the true issue of crime. Like, crime is a, you know,
symptomatic and societal. Yeah.
And it's also a social construct in the first place of what is considered criminal and what is not considered to be a criminal act. And really, what we need is a story about, like, the people who look like Mr. and Mrs. Incredible or Captain America who are enforcing those types of, like, bullshit laws. And I don't know. That's what I especially connected to this version of Legion because it was like calling into question what we like from superheroes.
I found it
a refreshing ending. It made me very excited for the next season.
Absolutely.
In a way that last season's finale, like,
that was just such a
fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, we're right back down the rabbit hole again. Yeah, it didn't feel like it was pushing it forward. It felt like, ha-ha, that was not the happy ending you expected.
I think one of my favorite things about all this is that Clark, Hamish Linklater, is just right all the time. Like, from day one, he's been saying all this stuff about David, and I love that first scene with them in season two where they sit down in the diner and he, like, calls his bluff with that thing with the ice cream where he's like, every time a character in a soap opera had amnesia or an evil twin, I would eat ice cream. And then he's like, oh, just 1 second. And he gets the ice cream. He's like, sorry, you were saying? Like, I love him just calling David on his bullshit. And the conversation with Sid about, you know, I'll just say it because someone has to, like, your boyfriend could destroy the whole world if you made him upset or something. Yeah. I think that character is fucking great. And, like, how he's fearless about Lenny as well. Like, this dude that's, you know, been through so much shit. And we praised him for, like, that final episode of series one where you see, like, how his time has been since having his face burnt. And just him being this kind of a little bit bitchy, bitter, like, I don't have time for this shit kind of guy. I think he's great.
Yeah, I mean, it does call into some serious continuity issues that Dr. Doom's assistant is him, but, you know, it's okay, you know, we're getting through it together.
We are.
And
yeah, so that's a big thing with this season. Our friends from Summerland have folded into Division 3, and they're like, the main set this season instead of Summerland is this Division 3 building. and we get, you know, Admiral Fukuyama, the basket-headed man, and the Vermilion androids, who are ladies with mustaches, and yeah, it's all very, like the building itself was a bit sinister, because it's all very, like, odd and fantastical, and the lighting, it's all very strange, and you get this kind of, I don't know, because like a year has passed, they're all just cool with them, so we never see the whole, I'm not sure if we can trust them, like, they all just do. And you get that whole shit with the delusion and, oh, they say that Fukuyama eats people. And all of that is a little bit, like, at times it was like, you were just trying to be as weird as you can possibly get away with. But they are potentially teasing some kind of ongoing plot there as the secondary thing to David being a villain. Is that, you know, we don't know much about Division 3 still, despite spending more time with them.
Yeah, and, I mean, I think what I like most about that is just how it contributes to the overall tone of the show, which is like, the tone of the show is fuck you.
yeah, kind of. Here's a guy with a basket on his head and some women with mustaches.
Fuck off. but it's honestly, it's genuinely refreshing. I know you're probably a bigger proponent of the Netflix, like, Marvel series, but, like, I remember there were moments late in the penultimate episode and then the finale of the season where I'm just like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe probably how much more, like, of the zeitgeist those Marvel Netflix shows are, like, have penetrated compared to this. Because, you know, Legion is, like, very, very small audience, I think, both literally. And
I'm
like,
it just continues to get made, and it clearly some money is spent on it because of the way it looks. And like,
yeah, and that's, like, the big thing to me. It was just, like, it wasn't quite, like, Breaking Bad level, like, in the desert scenes, but, like, this show looks really fucking good.
Yeah.
And the Marvel Netflix shows just, like, are, like, a step above Xena and Hercules from the late 90s. Like,
yeah.
And,
yeah,
like, even with those, at least there was that quaintness of it being obviously bad.
Yeah, campy.
Like, this,
yeah.
Which is, like, part of those shows' tone. But, like, these shows, it's just, like,
I hear what you're saying. Legion is high art.
Well, it's not so much that it's high art. It's just that...
No, it's a more mature show that's... I think it's Noah Hawley's name that gets them that money, because...
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is... I mean, it feels like he gets to make the show as his reward for Fargo being critical and awards hit.
Yeah, exactly. I just... It just seems every episode it's like there's going to be an announcement that this has been cancelled, but hopefully they just let him do his third season and end his story, but...
I think so. FX is pretty good. I mean, like...
Yeah, that's true.
FX is pretty good about letting, like... And I think they cut them off after one season. It's like once they, like The Americans, for instance, lasted six seasons because John Landgraf liked the fucking show. Like, the show has, like, never been a good ratings hit. But once it hit that first, once it got past that first season, this is probably, like, always where it was going to end. And I'm guessing, I think it's perfectly set to end after season three. I don't really think there's much more.
No, I don't think this needs to be a long-running thing, and, like, people got excited about the potential tie-ins to the X-Men film franchise or whatever, and I think it's turned out to be great to not do that. Like, the few times they do it, it's effective. And they do keep name-dropping the Professor and stuff like that, but this being its own little thing with these characters, and, like, because of how powerful David is on some level, you just can't go too long because it would just get out of hand.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be a smaller story and to be more tonal, and that's entirely what it is.
And, you know, we should probably talk about its place in the, you know, the X-Men cinematic universe.
Well, who fucking knows? Because what time period is this? Oliver got Summerland in the 40s. He asked David if free love was still a thing. He didn't know that Bombay was now called Mumbai, and he was away for 20 years. So it's like...
I mean, you know way more than I do, just based on that.
Okay, well, I mean, does that... You know, when he comes to Melanie, he's like, oh, do you remember Bombay? And she's like, it's called Mumbai now. Like, and that happened in 95, I think. But then, like, Division 3 have iPads, his ex-girlfriend had an iMac. It's like, what year is this? Like, where are we here? Everyone looks like they're in the 70s with their fashion and hair choices. I think meant to be ambiguous just...
Yeah.
Because we see so much of it through David's point of view.
Well... I mean, I think that perfectly brings up a very important point, which is that the X-Men timeline is still completely and utterly fucked, despite them making an entire movie trying to address it. you know, they just kind of... Because I remember Bryan Singer, Child Rapist, saying after X-Men 1 came out that the idea was that the show took place slightly in the future. Not, like, dramatically in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
But they clearly never established an exact timeline, because then all the, like, Logan and Days of Future Past would happen, like, 15 years later, which clearly doesn't really seem to be the case.
Yeah, and if David is, like, a, I don't know, early to mid-30s man, like, how old is the Xavier in this version?
Yeah, like, and if, look, James McAvoy exists in Deadpool now, then, like, when the fuck does Deadpool take place? Because we know what Patrick Stewart looks like. Like, he does not look like James McAvoy. I mean, that's the other, like, funny thing is that, like, the very, very subtle aging that the First Class trilogy actors go through in each film, like, despite the fact that they take place 10 years later, is non-hilarious.
I'm sorry, but isn't this girl now meant to be, like, 25 instead of 15? Like, what's happening there?
But I think that's kind of, at this point, like, I like that there's no point in caring about it.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, you know, Marvel's pretend anal retentiveness, where they'll just, like, forget things anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I remember the first episode, I was trying to be like, oh, so maybe Melanie is, like, Emma Frost, and, like, Sid is Rogue, and then I just gave up on that shit, and then they give you that amazing, like, chalkboard episode where they're, like, drawing Xavier and the Shadow King and stuff like that. So it's all worked out really well. Like, they basically,
was that this season?
No, that was series one, sorry.
I was gonna say, yeah. I was like, I wasn't complaining. It was more like, God, the way my memory works these days, I would have believed you.
Yeah, and they call back to the professor again in this season and stuff like that. But yeah, they've kept it broadly. It's like he's got room to play around because he's not using, except for David, he's not really using name brand characters.
And at this point, though, I'm not even sure what would be the best integration of the established X-Men names into Legion. And exactly, I think Deadpool pretty much nailed it, which is silent cameos from the main stars, and the D-list gets to be in the actual movie.
Exactly. And, like, you know, what's going to happen if, like, David Haller, Legion, meets,
like, fucking
Wolverine?
Ty Sheridan's, like, Cyclops.
Exactly.
Like, who gives a fuck? Like, how uninteresting would that actually honestly be?
Exactly.
So what could they even reasonably do? And I can only, like, maybe some, like, trippy cameo, but, like, you know, they'd have to be, you know, they should do, it's like, it should be with, like, Ray Park's Toad or January Jones' Emma Frost. It should be something so nonsensical and stupid. Oh, like, they should do a scene where, like, Ray Park's Toad is the architect in the Matrix. Like, just make it, like, if you really, like, that would be the greatest troll ever. If it's just some ridiculous, nonsensical cameo. Bring back Tyler Mayne Sabretooth. Bring back Leif Schreiber Sabretooth. Bring back both of them.
That senator that, like, turned into a puddle of goo, he just reforms in his senator form. Like,
it has to be something completely nonsensical.
Yeah.
And that I would be fully behind. Anything taken a little too seriously, though, would not feel true to the show at this point. Yeah. And the show has enough of its own thing that they don't need to do.
Yeah, like, it's a very loose use of the license, and, like, it's drawing from, like, the old comics that are kind of a little bit more out there and less continuity heavy. So, yeah, I think it all makes sense. Do you want to talk about the narration and, like, Jon Hamm? And
yeah,
because that's a new thing. He's not in every episode, but he's certainly in the first few. But yeah, we get these little, like, vignettes with Noah Hawley.
Holy shit! Did you see the viewers for this?
No.
In America, so season one, the premiere had 1.6 million viewers in America.
Yeah.
The finale had 800,000.
Wow.
That's really bad even by FX standards. That's season one.
Yeah.
Season two, they can't even crack 700,000 viewers for the premiere.
Wow.
The finale, 300,000. I have never... is the season three announced yet?
Yeah, confirmed.
100% the final season.
Yeah.
100% the final season. That is hysterical, even by FX standards.
Yeah, it's a very small number.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's fine.
That's wild.
Yeah. the Jon Hamm narration stuff. I really, really enjoyed these little, like, vignettes, like, talking about these, like, social panic and, like, the cave allegory and all that kind of... I just thought, like, sometimes it seemed like they were trying to shoehorn them in and they only loosely connected to what was happening. But overall, I just really enjoyed the sort of break from the rest of the show to do these really weird, visually interesting things. And I particularly liked... I saw someone complaining about the one where they were using the... You know, people being addicted to their phones and the cave allegory and saying how that doesn't have anything to do with the episode. And I would actually argue the opposite in that like they're saying how it makes you disassociate from other people and like you don't consider that other people matter, and that's exactly what David was going through. And like the point that Sid raises, that you know, maybe he actually just doesn't know the difference between right and wrong because he perceives the world in such a strange way. He is rapidly losing any empathy for other people. I thought that one was really effective in that way, and like contributing to his whole journey down towards like a villain by default kind of thing.
I have nothing to add.
Okay. So no, I just really like that one. I just, you know, John Hamm should narrate everything. And
yes. I think it works both. My reaction to Hamm's in this is that it works both completely on the level as like genuine narration and also hilarious as like on a somewhat meta level that it's John Hamm
of course.
Like, you know, it's Don Draper selling you on this bullshit.
Yeah. And, I don't know. It just, they were all just this exercise in how smart Noah Hawley and his writing team are. I was like, sure, educate me about things like, that I don't even know are true or not.
This seems like some great research. I have no idea. Maybe it's not.
Yeah. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not.
But it sounds good.
Yeah. Patonomy got kind of fucked again. Like, he just disappears in the final episode. I really keep waiting for him to be a bigger part of the show because I think his powers are interesting, and you know, the notion that a guy that remembers everything, like his ideal desired state is to have no short-term memory whatsoever, I thought was really well done. And he just ends up getting put into Fukuyama's like machine brain. And I guess he lives in there, and I assume he will be back, but it's such a shame because he's such a good actor, and like to see him just keep getting kicked to the side and then just to completely not be in the final episode, I was like, oh man.
It always felt like he was the character that they didn't know what to do with.
Yeah.
They're perpetually on the verge of redshirting him.
Yeah.
And,
I feel that's the whole reason he has that Tommy gun, because like his principal power set is to go into people's memories, and then what that has to do with him being like the man on the ground running around with a machine gun. Nothing. It's just we need to give him something else to do. The Loudermilks. Big fan of Kerry. Kerry is great. Seeing her just fight large numbers of people and win is always fun. I wish she had a lot more screen time because she's great. They were quite inconsistent with her little journey because they get put in a position where Kerry now goes inside of Kerry because the Shadow King like flipped it, and I guess because he doesn't want to give up his everyday life, they basically agree to live as separate people permanently now, and he's trying to like teach her about the world. And like to go from scenes where like she's learning to eat and drink and go to the toilet and stuff like that, and then in other scenes she seems like a perfectly like well-adjusted person. I don't know, it just seemed like they dropped the ball, and like I would have liked to see them do a bit more with like her learning to.
Where did the screen time go this season? Because I feel like I'm looking down the list, I'm like what happened? Like, was it just like all Legion all the time?
I mean, there was a lot
of Farouk.
It was very dominated by David and Farouk and everyone else.
And I guess like Sid was playing two different characters.
Yeah, Sid. So that, I didn't love the future Sid stuff. Like, you know, the whole reveal, it's like, oh, David's actually the cause of all this. It's like, okay, obviously, but I mean, did anyone stop and consider that you all fucking around with him is what made him this way? Like, to make him be friends with his enemy, who then kills his sister, and to, like, force him down a path he doesn't want to go down, and, like, not reveal all this information to him. It's like, if you considered if you just let him be, that maybe none of this would have happened. But, I mean, he's still, you know, his sort of character flaws were there in Series 1, and they're bigger than that. But, you know, just this idea that we have to stop him from ending the world, and then they basically push him down that path.
Yeah. I feel like I need to rewatch the whole show at this point, because I really enjoyed in the moment. It's just like, I do question how it's working on that next level, and I don't, my instinct is that it's not there, and that's really, that's just like the bottom line. It's just like, it's not at that next level.
I had like this list of running questions I had about what the fuck's going on and what this means and what that means. And I found I was able to answer a lot of them by rewatching stuff, but there are still so many things where it's like, well, what's the deal with this? And yeah, it is a tricky show. And I think at times you do need to just kind of let it wash over you and maybe let some of it just sort of sit in your brain and then maybe go back to it again. But it's not the kind of show where every single line said is going to make sense and every single plot detail will perfectly tie it together. It just never will be that.
Yeah. And my instinct has just been to just kind of let it wash over me. So I do miss, I mean, I will admittedly, I miss a ton of stuff in the show because I'm just kind of like experiencing it. And it's almost like I am consciously not remembering things at times with the show. So there's like, this has no value, this has no value, this has no value. Wait, they actually reference this? What does this mean again? the show is always fun to watch at the end of the day. Even, you know, on some of the episodes that drag a little bit, whether accidentally or on purpose. You know, that repetitive feeling in the show sometimes is for real, and sometimes it's just because I'm not paying attention.
And sometimes you're watching the same scene for 45 straight minutes. Yeah, I mean, we're still getting amazing performances out of so many people. I think Dan Stevens is a great actor. So many of the cast are great. It's really, really, really well produced. The music is fucking great. Like, some of the covers and the music, like the original versions of these songs, really well chosen. Like, yeah, I think it's, like, technically one of the best shows out there. And I don't know, it's just a great sort of exercise in how weird Noah Hawley's brain is on some level. It's one of my favorite shows that has come out in recent years. It's just, it also frustrates me to death at times. And I think that's on me. I think I need to be less, like, precious about what does this mean and where's this leading and what happens with this. And, like Oliver making that threat to Farouk, he's like, I'm going to kill you, you know. And then he's like, oh, can I have a hint? And he says, what is one plus one? Two. No, you're wrong. And it's like, that leads nowhere. And they have a third season to make that lead somewhere. But that really bothered me and kept sticking out because I thought it was really well acted by both of them. And I think, you know, Oliver has been missing for most of season one and now he's a prisoner in season two. And it's kind of like, while he kind of seems like he might be a shitty dude, you do also kind of want to see him get that revenge on Farouk, who ends the season, by the way, just allowed to walk around. Like, they go through all that effort to capture him, and then it's like, actually, David's bad. It's like, yeah, but Farouk did kill a whole bunch of people.
Well, and you're so just... that was my... I think it's a good kind of closing question. How much of that do you think is on the level? How much of that...
I have zero idea. Like, is he actually tricking them all? Like, is he free and in charge?
That would be really, like, boring. Mm-hmm. If he was tricking them all. But it also
that would be very disappointing.
Very ridiculous that this is just, like, what was happening.
Yeah.
And
I mean, maybe it's a mental projection and he is safely kept in a room somewhere. I don't know. But, yeah, it seems very strange to just start trusting him, given all that murder he did. Also bothers me a bit that he had control of David in season one, and he never made any play for this body. And now suddenly it's the most important thing in the world, and he's desperately looking for this body of his. But, I mean, hey.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see how, if I were to rewatch season one, what my reaction would be to it now. It's like, it feels fairly disconnected on that level.
I don't know, it just felt very... Like, the entire focus of those early episodes are, it's a big plague, there's this catalyst, there's the monk, there's the chattering teeth, something's coming that's going to end the world, and all this kind of stuff. And then it's, like, all neatly hand-waved, and it just changes to racing through the desert for what feels like forever. Like, he beats him in the first 5 minutes. By the way, those two singing behind blue eyes to each other while they go and engage in a big psychic battle. Amazing.
Great.
And, like, the cartoons fighting... reminded me of the chalkboard and stuff, and I thought that was really, really good. I'm just down, like, to see whatever Noah Hawley comes out with. Like, give me more of these, like, visually wanky, like, musical montage scenes and, like, all this weird shit. Like, give me more of it. It's just, yeah, I think it's something you do need to kind of, on first watch, just take it all at value and then maybe give it a rewatch later. And but yeah, I'm very excited to see what they do with that inevitably final season. I hope they do get to make it, because those viewing numbers were alarmingly low.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they would change their mind if it's been confirmed. But,
no, I mean, yeah, it's out there that it's getting a third season. But yeah, I would hope. I would think that's the last one. But yeah, everyone's great. Rachel Keller's a great actress. I could just go through this whole list and say, this person's a good actor. But that would take hours, and I think we're pretty much done here. So let's not do that. Yeah.
What should have been our third of fourth X-Men podcast is actually our second one this year, right?
I think so, yeah.
It was supposed to be a very busy X-Men year.
Yeah.
And now I guess we are done with X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Dark Phoenix is next, like, February. Yeah.
And then the kids one is the August after that.
Yeah. And then allegedly X-Force and maybe
Gambit is not happening.
No.
Gambit is just simply not
happening. I really like your idea of just putting Gambit in X-Force. I think that's a great call. Like, fuck it, salvage this situation. Well, then who knows when you will next hear from me and Mike Thomas. But you can hear Kevin Ford and Ben Lundy talk about Lost every Monday from Broadcast Hit. Sunday, starting July 15th, me and Ben covering The Leftovers. And then, you know, maybe Mike Thomas will pop up somewhere. Who knows?
Yeah, we might, you know, welcome you all to the real world.
It's the name of the website, enterthereworld.com. Also, teeth. If we haven't all just burst into flame by then. You enjoy your fan. I'm going to go find an ice cube and just spoon it until I fall asleep. And hopefully we're not dead in the next few days.
Yeah.
All right, what a happy note to end on.